Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends. Happy Monday. Welcome back. I'm so excited to be joining you again after a week of Share-a-thon. Thank you so much to those of you who contributed to the great work that we are doing and our ability to bring you this program that prescribes hope for healthy families. And we are going to do just that today, like we do every day. And I'm really excited to have a guest we had on recently come back today. We have Dorinda Wilson joining us again. Now, Dorinda has been married to her husband, Daryl, for 34 years. She has 8 kids, y'all, 8 kids and 10 grandkids, and she's been homeschooling for 30 years. So I think she has a place to speak from experience. She is a trusted voice and resource at homeschool conventions and on her podcast, the Dorinda Wilson Podcast. She is the author of 4 books, and the book we talked about last time is her newest book, Raising Boys to Men, a simple, mercifully short book on raising and homeschooling boys. And, you know, the honest truth is, I think there are a lot more resources for raising girls than raising boys in today's world. And it's easy to talk about some of the issues that girls are facing, and we're just kind of in a cultural moment in talking about that. But, you know, I've got girls and boys, and the truth is I worry about my boys more than I worry about my girls, just in the world they're trying to navigate that is so complex. And so Dorinda and I had a great conversation just about being boy moms and boy parents and raising boys, and we ran out of time. And I wanted to talk about screens, boys and screens. We talk a lot about girls and screens and how it impacts their self-image and, you know, how they craft their identity and makeup tutorials and all those things. But screens are impacting boys too. And so Dorinda has agreed to come back for conversation number 2 so that we can continue to combine, you know, my worldview, my expertise with her incredible experience and have a conversation about it. So, Dorinda, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be back.
Well, I would love for you, just for those of our listeners who maybe didn't catch the first show, just give us a little story about who you are and your passion for raising boys.
Well, as you said, I have 8 children, and 5 of them are boys. And out of our, we just found out we have grandbaby number 11 on the way. And out of all of those grandkids, 7 are boys.
Oh my goodness.
So I've had a lot of exposure to all the developmental phases repeatedly when it comes to boys. And I just see so many consistencies and so many things that I just feel like most moms aren't aware of when it comes to raising boys. Because like you said, our culture really has a fair amount to offer when it comes to raising girls. Mm-hmm. And I also think that as moms, we tend to understand our girls a little more, you know, mm-hmm. but when it comes to our boys, some of the things they do, it's a complete foreign idea to us. And it shocks us and it can scare us and it can cause us to parent from a place of fear, which is the last thing we need to do when it comes to parenting. Mm-hmm. And so as I've looked back over my years of raising and homeschooling our boys, and then now watching our grandsons, most of whom live around us, actually, right on the same property, I get daily doses of this. I just love them. I love their adventurous spirit. I love the fact that they think differently than me, and it is so fun to watch that play out in everyday life. But I don't think most moms generally feel that way. And so that's why I wanted to, in my book, speak to moms specifically to help give them a better understanding of their sons so that they can better equip them to move from being a boy to a man, like a real man. And so I'm just very passionate about that. And I think boys get the raw end of the deal so much of the time. They end up misdiagnosed, misunderstood for doing things that just their creator made them to do. Now, sometimes it needs a little bit of redirection, but it often comes from that place of, you know, high energy, all that testosterone coursing through their veins. And so we just have to understand, you know, that's happening, and we can direct towards something productive. So there's so many things we can do to encourage our boys, and I just want moms to know those things.
I love your heart for this, Dorinda. I just love it because you have lived it, like you said, multiple cycles over now. You know, you're in your second generation here, which is so exciting to see. And I think that lived experience is so important. And, you know, I had two girls first and then had my boys, and I felt like a fish out of water. I really did, because my girls are so much more verbal. So it's easy, you know, they'll tell me exactly what's bothering them and why and how and all of the details. And please hold your questions till the end, Mom. I'm not done explaining. Whereas the boys, it's just, you know, it takes a different kind of relating. And you and I had a great conversation last time about, you know, talking to them with fewer words, you know, and using fewer words, which is so hard for us to do. But, you know, one of the things that is impacting both boys and girls in our culture today is screen time. And I do think that we talk a lot about girl screen time, and we know from research that social media is more negatively impacting girls than boys, especially younger girls about age 13 to 15, that it increases their risk of anxiety, of depression, of self-harm, of suicide, of eating disorders, all kinds of things. But one thing that we're not talking about a lot is boys and screens and video games. Now, this is so popular. And so, Dorinda, I wanted to share with you, I actually was doing a little bit of, you know, background research on this, and I discovered how big the video gaming industry is by learning about the chairs that go along with video gaming, the video gaming chair market. I had no idea. So it's currently $1.45 billion a year, and it's expected to grow to $2.14 billion by 2029. And I was looking at this article in Time magazine that said the average budget-friendly chair is about $250. Now, I don't know about you, Dorinda, but I mean, for anything that I think, even the office chair I'm sitting in right now for my radio show, it was not $250. I mean, that is just a lot. And, you know, I think back to my own practice, and I think of this one specific case that I had of a very young preteen age boy who was really addicted to his video gaming console. And when his mother took it away from him, he physically assaulted her and had to be admitted to an inpatient psychiatric unit. And it really was very eye-opening to me about how prevalent video games are. So I want to start off by saying, hey, I'm not going to spend the next 47 minutes hating on video games and telling you all they're evil and horrible and you should never do it, because I thought you had a great example of this, that your husband actually was the one in your family who first bought a video gaming console, and it's become a tool you use in a positive way. So I really wanted you to share that.
Yeah, well, I had been against the whole idea for a long time, and we were out shopping. We were actually yard sailing, and
love it.
My husband ran across this video console. It's really nice. It had, you know, a bunch of games that came with it, and he suggested we should purchase it and put it away for Christmas, because, you know, we had eight kids. We were on a single income, so we were kind of Christmas shopping all year on a budget. So we would take these things and put them away. And I was struggling so much with that. And I just said, are you sure? Are we ready for this? You know, because I knew what it was going to do. I was going to be the one most of the time to be monitoring and watching this and helping them through this. And I didn't actually know the first thing about it, because I don't care about video games. I never have. I still really don't. But what ended up happening was my husband really was insistent. He said, I think now's a good time, and we really need to teach these boys how to do this while they're still under our roof, how to handle game time, screen time, that kind of thing. And so we bought it. The boys were they were so surprised, because they were sure that they were never going to see a video game console for a long, long time if it was up to me. And they weren't wrong about that. But husband, in his wisdom, said, I think it's time. And so I went with it, and we gave it to them. I will say the look on their faces was just priceless. But then the hard work began of monitoring and teaching them what does this look like. We kind of had to learn together. But I started out just, and I kept this all the way through, through their years at home, they had 30 minutes. That was it. They had 30 minutes to play. And of course, that went into questions like, well, if I'm watching my brother play, does that count towards my 30 minutes? And this is where it gets so messy and difficult. And I remember being at certain points thinking, oh my goodness, I wish I could just throw this whole thing out the window. And sometimes when I got to that point, I realized we needed a Sabbath from. I needed it as much as they did. And so I would just say, you know what, we're going to just not play games for a day or 2 days or however long I felt like was appropriate. And we're going to take a 3-day fast or whatever. I could tell by the way that they responded whether or not they were too tied to these video games. Mm. And if they were pretty good with it, or they maybe weren't at first, but they got themselves under control. But yes, because I would get some of that, you know, that that angst, you know, because it can be an addictive thing, and it's a fun thing for them. Like, they really enjoyed it, and they played together, which I loved. And they loved playing games where there was a lot of teamwork and camaraderie and having to find resources and things like that. And that was the other thing, like sifting through the games, like how? I don't know anything about these games. So out of that stack of games we got, we immediately tossed several of them. But then we kind of talked with the boys and walked with them through the game saying, do you believe that? Do you think that this is something that you should be doing every day? Is this kind of game something that's actually helpful or productive in some ways? Or, you know, just asking questions and letting them sort of speak into it. And that really helped a lot because they owned what they were doing more readily. You know, they had something to say about it, and they sort of rose to the occasion. I was really proud of them for that. But to speak to what you were saying about the camaraderie, what ended up happening was they did do the gaming, and it was a battle sometimes, and it was hard, and it was a lot of work, but it was so worth it. Because fast forward now, all these years later, and those five boys, some of them live across the country from each other, every Friday night, if they possibly can, they get on and they game together, and they have the best time. And, aww, you know, guys tend to not text each other or call each other, communicate that way. But yep. I tell you what, they have stayed bonded through the gaming, and even some of their wives now jump on and play, and it's just hilarious. And it's a way for them to, it's actually been a way for some to get to know the other spouse over, you know, because we don't see them that often. So it's actually been a positive experience for us. But it required a lot of work and a huge investment in staying course in terms of teaching them wisdom as to how to use these, what we would call tools. And I think this is the important thing, is that we look at things like our phones and our video games and things like that as tools for good. And we steward them accordingly. We have a responsibility to do that. And so we need to teach our kids how to do that, and specifically our boys. I've also noticed that gaming has really helped my boys who have, as long as it's not all the time, you know, it's limited, it can really help with some of their ADHD. When they're having trouble focusing, sometimes gaming will get them back on course and they're able to focus a little better. And this is specifically with our son who is on the spectrum. We found that to be helpful. So there are some good things.
Well, what a great case study, Dorinda, and showing that, you know, things in and of themselves, phones or video games or other kinds of screen engagements, they're not bad in and of themselves, just like a car is not bad. But, you know, I think the most important thing that you said that I hope our listeners caught was you said that you got the gaming console, which, you know, a lot of parents will agonize over that decision. Should we or shouldn't we? Mm-hmm. But then once they make that decision, it's like, oh, okay, well, then we've reached the end of the road. It's done. But I wrote down what you said, exactly what you said. You said, we got the gaming console, but then the hard work began. And you just beautifully described mm-hmm. an investment in teaching them how to use it. And that takes a lot. So when we come back, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about peer pressure and a screen-free approach and what's right or wrong. We've got so much to talk about, Dorinda. I could talk to you every day, but we will continue this discussion on boys and screens when we come back, and we'll help you find hope for healthy families. Why is our society so ravenous to abort babies? According to a former Satanist, the demonic forces have a bloodlust for the innocents, and sickly believe their blood sacrifice empowers evil. Make no mistake, we are fighting a spiritual battle as we protect the most innocent among us, babies in their mother's womb. Preborn stands on the front lines of this battle, and their network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, often next to abortion mills where unspeakable evil takes place every day. Preborn offers God's love and life to protect hurting women and precious preborn babies. And every time a baby is saved, which happens 200 times a day, good conquers evil. Please make your most generous gift to empower good and rescue precious souls. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound that doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Hey friends, welcome back to my conversation with Dorinda Wilson. She's got 8 kids, 10 grandkids, one on the way, a whole passel of boys. She got more boys than girls. And we are talking today about boys and screens. Now, she's the author of multiple books, but her latest book is Raising Boys to Men, a simple, mercifully short book on raising and homeschooling boys, which I thought was just so perfect, Dorinda. And before the break, you were sharing your family's own experience with video gaming and how you got the gaming console, but then the hard work began. And Dorinda, I really think that this is something that parents don't do enough, because it's very easy to then let the screen become an entertainer, to become a babysitter. And as parents, the honest truth is a lot of times we just don't have the time or energy to invest in the supervision that is required to teach responsible use. And so that's where I see kids who are engaging with video games that really they have no business engaging with. But a lot of times it's just because parents are naive or unaware of the things that are there. And when we think about video games from our generation, I'm sure some of you are thinking about Mario Kart, you know, with the little digital sound and like mushrooms that like disappear. Like maybe you're the generation, you're Pong, you know, or Atari, like that's what you're thinking. But today's video games are no joke. And if you're not aware, I do want to make parents aware of the Entertainment Software Rating Board. This is ESRB that rates video games. And so you have E for everyone, which I'll just give a disclaimer, even those E for everyone may not be for your everyone. So you still should screen that. Then you've got Everyone 10 plus or E10 plus. So they rate that for 10 and older. Then there's teen, then there's mature, which is 17 plus, and then adults only at 18 plus. And if you haven't played a modern day video game, you might be really shocked to see the level of violence that is there, the level of aggression, the level of just things that I won't go into too much detail here, but we're talking about very gory, very explicit things. And if you're not watching those things, that can be a real big problem. Another thing that I'll warn parents about is that video games, many of them do give you the ability to communicate with strangers all over the world. And so not too long ago, I was in an 8th grade classroom talking about gaming safety. And I asked the classroom, how many of you have been contacted by a stranger? And most of them who had been playing video games raised their hand. I said, how many of you have been asked to do something or told something that made you feel uncomfortable? Again, almost every single one of them raised their hand. I said, how many of you shared this information with your parents? And not a single hand raised, Dorinda, not a single hand. Because, you know, and it's not that they're bad kids or that they are lying to their parents, but they know if I tell you about this threat, your immediate response is going to be to take it away. And I don't want that to happen. So here we are. Now, in my family, we don't have video games. I think we have a Wii that was around for a while that was like baseball and tennis and things like that. But we never put a ban on it. We never said like, that will never happen in our house. We just simply gave our boys compelling alternatives. Like we went out and played basketball with them. We built a gaga ball pit in the backyard. I had to think even for a minute what it is. It was really easy. My husband, my sons did it. And then all the neighbor boys would come over and they play a gaga ball out there. Those are really important things. And you know, Dorinda, I think there different families are different. And there is room here for a screen-free approach. There's room for a measured approach like we have talked about. What are the benefits of this and how do we decide what is right for your family? What was your experience in that, Dorinda?
Well, I think the younger the children are, the more you have to think about a screen-free approach. I believe that if you can go for as long as possible without putting your kids in front of screens, you're going to be better off. And, you know, there are things that one of the benefits of avoiding screens altogether is you get to sidestep like a whole host of problems. Like you don't have to worry about your kids becoming addicted to screens and can be confident that their brains are benefiting developmentally from the lack of screen time. I love that your family created alternatives. I think that's super important, being very intentional about not just saying no, but saying, you know, no to this, but yes to this. You know, another benefit of avoiding screens is you don't have to worry about them being exposed to things like pornography, even by accident, or predators and things like that. You also keep your children's childhood simpler. And I think there's something to be said for that. In a world that is just so chaotic and noisy and messy, I think that a simple childhood is one of the greatest gifts that we can give our kids. And getting outside, that is just huge. The other thing is you don't have to monitor screen time, which will save you a lot of grief. So there are a lot of benefits to just waiting as long as possible. And especially those developing brains in those early years, we want those brains to be firing on all cylinders. And so much of that really happens so much more readily out in nature, doing hands-on things. And then you're going to move into the years where maybe it is going to be you're going to have a minimalist approach, but you're also going to monitor. You're going to be very intentional about what you allow them to play. And you're not just going to tell them, we're going to invite them into the conversation. This is why we're being intentional about these things. And then you can begin to talk about some of the dangers age appropriately, you know, some of the dangers that are out there on the internet. And why we want to make wise choices in the use of this particular tool and maybe even refer to it as a tool. So they see it as something to be used for good and not just another way to be entertained, you know? And so I think that just some of those approaches could be super, super helpful. And I know that it worked really well to involve our boys in that conversation and let them help make some decisions. We could ask questions. You also learn a lot about where they are, you know, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, as they're answering these questions. And so it's really approaching it not from a place of fear, but a place of understanding that you have a responsibility as the parent to guard your children's hearts and their minds and their eyes and their ears. And at the same time, while you're doing that, we can also be teaching them wisdom so that they do learn how to use that particular thing. And again, this happens gradually over time. And I am a big fan of, you know, if you're going to start allowing your kids on the internet at a certain point, you want to make sure you have a bunch of guards in place. You know, there are different programs out there to keep kids from going places that they shouldn't go. So we just have so much more available to us now than we had when we first started out, because it was just sort of a very new thing and we were really navigating uncharted territory at the time. So there was a lot of prayer on my part, a lot of prayer. And I remember asking God to just basically like just show me, give me a nudge if there's something going on that I'm not aware of. And he did. It was amazing. But working with a team, you know, as a team with, you know, my husband and with the Lord, and then also, like I said, involving our sons in part of that conversation to instill wisdom into them, seemed to be a really good process for us to go through together.
There's so much wisdom that you just shared, and those moments, Dorinda, you talked about inviting your kids into the conversation, having a team approach, having a layered approach with layered safety, you know, precautions in there, and by even calling it a tool. Like, this is not just entertainment. This is a tool where you're learning how to interact with the world. And, you know, what I see is that peer pressure is really big. And you know what? I'm not talking mm-hmm. about the kids. I'm talking about the parents. When our kids come home and they say, well, their mom let them have this, and then they know the dances that go along with this game, and I don't know it, and I'm not playing it, and we feel that pressure, and then we start to think, well, am I being overprotective? Am I overthinking this? Should I not do this? What do you say? Because you, Dorinda, you have lived with boys. Now you're in your second generation. What do you say to parents who feel that pressure, looking and comparing their parenting to other parents?
Well, I would say that you're setting the example of how to handle peer pressure. So keep that in mind. Your kids are watching you. If you're caving in to comparisons and constantly questioning yourself because, you know, so-and-so is doing it, then they're going to pick up on that. And that's going to become a pattern for them as well. So, you know, if we want our kids to have a biblical worldview, we have to teach it to them. And part of having a biblical worldview is being willing to stand your ground when you know that that is where you're supposed to stand. We want our boys to know that it is worth the fight. It's worth the discomfort, because we're called as believers to walk in obedience to God, whether it feels good or doesn't feel good, whether everyone's doing it or whether they're not. It's really such a personal decision, and one that really needs to be made within your marriage and within your own family.
And actually, in your book, you advise parents, and I agree with this, that it is necessary. Not just do you do it, you must do it. You must challenge your child's worldview, which I know that sounds like so controversial, so we can explain. But because the question that you pose to your readers, Dorinda, really is when and how. So what has been your experience as your children have grown to adulthood, and how you've approached that to challenge their worldview, to strengthen it with the purpose of strengthening it, but just like you talked about, making sure that they are ready for that and they are ready to respond to challenges? Because I think, Dorinda, if they can't respond to challenges that we're presenting in the home, how are they going to respond to challenges that are in the world? So what has your motherhood experience taught you on that?
Well, I agree with you. Those things should start in the home. Those questions, the challenging should start there. We need to have those conversations with our kids. And developing a worldview doesn't happen overnight. It's the process of just countless mini conversations. They don't happen in these big, huge conversations. Typically, it's a little bit at a time as things come up. But we have to remain intentional. And then there's a point at which their worldview does need to be challenged. It is a matter of when. And so I think that it really depends on the age of your son. Like, I wouldn't expect a boy much younger than 13 to be able to handle certain situations where it really requires them to speak out and be a light where they are. And part of this is because they haven't really hit that age of reason, and they may not be equipped for it. Again, it depends on the child, but we have to look at their spiritual maturity, whether or not the parents have done the appropriate groundwork to prepare them for the peer pressure. And so what we want to do is not hide them necessarily from peer pressure, but we want to protect them from what might be unnecessary and too soon. It's this really, it's kind of like a dance between just protection, which we have a responsibility to do, and then slowly allowing them to experience this is what the world is like, this is what the world is teaching, and see for ourselves and let them see for themselves how they handle it, because it'll tell them a lot about their worldview and how solid, and you, us as parents as well, both of us will learn a lot from those situations. And if it's my kids, like, nothing's a failure if you learned something from it. So we walk away from that and we have a conversation about how that could have been done better, or is that something you feel like you can actually continue to handle, or do we need to, like, remove you from that situation for now until you're a little more mature? What we don't want to do is, we know that our kids need to experience temptation at some point, but the scripture is really clear that we should not be the ones who are putting them in a position to tempt mm-hmm. them to sin. And so it's a fine line. It has to be prayed over. You have to know your child. I think you really need to know your son, and then just give something a try and see what happens, you know?
You know,
we just all have to, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think about the scripture in Deuteronomy, talk about these things as you walk along the road. And mm-hmm. as, you know, if there were screens in the Bible, I feel like, or as you sit and watch television at night, or as you see things come across a screen, because, you know, what I know, Dorinda, from my perspective is that research strongly supports the value of viewing screens together as a family, watching mm-hmm. what your kids mm-hmm. are watching, playing the games that your kids are playing. But we just honestly don't do that. We treat screens as babysitters. We're busy. We're just kind of apathetic. And we literally leave our kids to their own devices. And I think about the mm-hmm. Documentary I just watched called Quiet on Set, which alleges some of the abuses that happened and on the set of Nickelodeon. And what I discovered from that documentary, what they presented as, is that there were adult writers who made very suggestive and explicit jokes that generally went over kids' heads, but adults would get, and they got a perverse pleasure out of this. And I couldn't help but think, Dorinda, that if I had been watching that show, or adults had been watching that show, they would have gotten it. And what a great opportunity to start dialogue. So as you're playing a game mm-hmm. and you come, there are all kinds of ethical dilemmas in video games. Like, you would be surprised mm-hmm. at the decisions that you have to make, right? You have to make decisions about how you level up or those kinds of things. And what a great opportunity to talk those through and say, you know, when we were playing that video game earlier, this situation came up and it made me think of this. What would you do with that? Mm-hmm. And I think that's mm-hmm. what we have to do, rather than, like, letting them watch things and feeling guilt-ridden and being the screen police all the time. We need to invest in healthy alternatives rather than limit setting, and use those opportunities to guide their decision-making and influence their worldview. Well, again, so much to talk about with Dorinda. I feel like I wish I could put her in my pocket and take her around with me to give me advice as I'm mothering. But when we come back, we're going to talk about another kind of screen. We'll talk about pornography. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, welcome back. And you are listening to me talk with Dorinda Wilson. She is the author of Raising Boys to Men, a simple, mercifully short book on raising and homeschooling boys. And we've been talking today about boys and screens, which is not a conversation I'm hearing happening a lot. And we've just had a really great conversation about video games, and Dorinda has given a really compelling framework to use them as a tool. And I encourage you, parents, if you're thinking about it, to make sure that you do your homework. But then, as Dorinda said, if you decide to go with a video gaming console, that's really where the hard work begins after you've done your homework. And it is really sobering to see the risks and the dangers specifically that our boys are encountering. And as we move into this final part of our conversation, I do wanted to give a disclaimer for little younger or more sensitive ears. We're going to talk about the issue of boys and pornography, because that is a risk that is coming across their screen. And although, you know, we do see boys and girls engaging in this, boys are really a lot more at risk. It would be dishonest to say that that is not the case. And, you know, in your book, you share some experiences that you've had with this, Dorinda. And so what was that like for you as a mom, and how did you work through it?
Well, I'll never forget when one of our sons was about 17, he just very nervously brought me into his room to tell me that he had been struggling with pornography and he could not live with the guilt anymore. And I was so thankful that he told me that, boy, that I have a mixture of emotions. I was sad and angry that he'd been exposed to this. I felt guilty that I'd had no clue. And I was fearful that I wouldn't know how to help him. So I'm grateful, though, that in that moment, God gave me a peace that helped me to just respond very, very calmly. And I thanked him for having the courage to come to me. And I asked him to just tell me, what did he need from his dad and me? And, you know, he told us he mainly needed us to pray for him and then also to be direct and ask him regularly if he was viewing pornography, because he's a horrible liar, and we all knew that about him. So he put himself in a position where he wouldn't be able to lie to us. And so we were confident that this would be sufficient. It might not be sufficient for every boy, but we knew it was for him because we knew our son well. And so we prayed with him, we prayed for him, and he did overcome that struggle. But that road to recovery is not always as simple as that. And pornography can be a beast of an addiction. And this is why we have to be diligent in protecting and equipping our boys. And again, teaching them wisdom in using the internet. So a few years later, though, that same son came to me and asked if he could be on my podcast to talk about his story. And I was a little taken back because I thought, oh, do you realize what you're doing? I said to him, do you realize that anyone will be able to listen to this episode? Is there anyone that you don't want to know about this? And he just looked me squarely in the eyes and he said, even if there was someone, it would only be pride keeping me from telling my story. He said, if I can just help one person, I want to do this. So we sat down in front of that microphone after I had him pray for a few days, just to be sure.
Yeah.
We did. We sat down in front of that microphone and he told his story from his perspective and I shared it from mine. And it was real and it was raw and it was beautiful. And it was just such a living testimony of the kind of God we serve. He is a redeemer. He gives beauty for ashes. And I just received so many thankful responses from moms who were able to use that episode actually as a conversation starter. So they listened together with their husbands and sons. And it was a place to have that conversation. And it really made a difference in a number of families' lives. You know how you hear from some, but there are probably more that I never heard from. And so, you know, God did take that and use it for the good. But I'm telling you, it's painful. And it is so incredibly accessible. In fact, the young boys are targeted. You can just
absolutely
ask any of my sons. They have told me, you know, they get these advertisements and these people reaching out to them that I never hear from, that my daughters never hear from. It's because they know that boys are vulnerable. And so it's our responsibility as parents to protect them from that. And so, again, when we were going through this, it was, you know, quite a number of years back, and we were navigating uncharted territory and so much to learn. And I feel like many parents are a lot more equipped than I was.
It's changed a lot.
There are so many, you know, more tools and things that are offered out there to help us with that. But yeah, it is something that we have to really, really consider, because it's important to understand that this is about so much more than just their sexual purity. It is also about their future wife and their marriage and their children. And so when we take that big picture, I think it helps us be a lot more intentional.
You know, Dorinda, I have to say, what a tremendous son you raised, because you did so many things right. You developed that relationship with him. You cultivated a relationship in which he knew He could come to you and anytime and talk about anything. That is really courageous and brave and such a great example of healthy parenting, where we know that our kids are going to encounter threats. We know our kids are going to make mistakes. We know our kids are going to make choices that are contrary to what we tell them because they're human just like we're human. But the fact I want to highlight the things I think you did so well, because you had laid the groundwork for that relationship. When he came to you, as hard as I'm sure it was, you stayed calm. You told him you were sorry that he had experienced this. You thanked him for coming to you and assured him it was a safe space. And then you came alongside him in his struggle rather than coming at him, you know, and making it a combative situation. You were his ally. And the reason I think this is so important for parents to hear, and having the courage to address it like you did, which again, every family is different. Every situation is going to be different. Every level of support is going to be different. But what that did was it literally stopped the ruts that were occurring in his brain development to prefer a pathway for pornography, for screen relationships over real relationships. And what you did, Tarinda, was you gave him his best chance for recovery by responding to it honestly, truthfully, courageously, and then walking alongside him. And I have so much admiration for him stepping behind the microphone and sharing that. And if you want to listen to that episode, Dorinda's podcast is called the Dorinda Wilson Podcast, and it's episode 78. She shares this in her book. And I share in my book, Dorinda, Behind Closed Doors, a guide to help parents and teens navigate through life's toughest issues. One of those is pornography. And it was really interesting because I found a study in Britain that said that 75% of parents said, my child has never seen pornography, while only about 50% of kids said the same. So we know it's happening where kids aren't talking to us about it. And that can be really hard. And a lot of parents are caught off guard like that, just like you are. So what encouragement do you have, Dorinda, for parents who are maybe still in the middle part? Their kid is still actively struggling, or they've just discovered a struggle, or they're about to discover a struggle. What advice do you give them now, looking back with hindsight, to find hope and encouragement?
I think just what you were sharing, just, you know, knowing that when our kids know that we're on their side, we're not coming at them, we're coming alongside of them. If we can communicate that to them, that is so important. And even before that, and hopefully it won't get to that point where it actually happens to them, but we want to be talking about these things at an age-appropriate level. So we can start these conversations before our kids are actually on the internet and potentially exposed. Obviously, we have great tools now, filters and things that we can use, but occasionally those fail. And so we still need to equip them with the knowledge that there is evil out there. And there are people who, you know, don't love God, and they don't love children, and they actually want to harm them. And they are out there and they're looking through the internet for kids like them. And so we want to equip them to be wise. Just being aware can make such a difference. And we are going to repeatedly do this because kids forget. And we're going to have that conversation on a regular basis at an age appropriate level, so that really sinks in and they recognize the internet as, you know, obviously it's a tool. There's a place we can do some really great things, but then there is a very nefarious side to it. And they need to be aware of that as well. And so again, we're sending this message that we're on your team. We want you to be able to handle this. We want you to be able to avoid anything that would be harmful to you. I think kids really respond to that because they don't want to be harmed. You know, yeah. They have a sense that they need protection. And so when we verbalize that to them, we're actually giving them security. And we need to, the older they get, I think we need to be willing to say, you know, maybe even say things more bluntly about what's out there, almost shockingly.
Yes.
That it gets their attention and they go, whoa, wait, mom doesn't usually talk like that. But wow, that's that. I've never heard her say that, but I want them to know that nothing is off limits in terms of them talking to me and telling me what's going on. You can talk to me about anything. So if I take that initiative and I am rather blunt about, almost shockingly blunt, especially as they get into the teen years, about what's out there and the potential and the potential dangers of it, they're going to go, oh, I can talk to my parents. I can, because they've already talked to me about this.
I agree with that, Dorinda. And there's a lot of parents who are really afraid to expose their kids to things they haven't been exposed to yet. But when we're talking about issues like pornography, it's not a question of if. It is a question of when. Your child almost certainly will be exposed in some way and some time. And most of the time, that first exposure is innocent. You know, you Google something. Mm-hmm. This happened to one of my children actually last week, just Googling something completely innocent and then calling me immediately and saying, oh my gosh, this is mortifying. I don't want this on my search history.
Wow.
You know, or getting an email, opening a spam email, or having a text from a friend with screen sharing, or saying, hey, look at this. Or if you're on social media, getting a quote unquote friend request from someone you don't know that's pornographic. And I think it is important for us to position ourselves as the experts. Now, this does not mean, like you said, telling them every gory detail and every graphic, explicit detail of everything they could be exposed to. But sometimes, in some ways, telling them things they don't yet know, it sends them a signal that I know more about the world than you do. And you can come to me as a place for wise and trusted counsel. Because what the world is telling them is, oh, your parents are so outdated. They don't know anything. You know, they're out of touch. You know, time has moved on. But as we wrap up here in our last couple of minutes, Dorinda, one of the things I want to end with is that you advise including our children in conversations when we're making decisions about those limit settings and what those are going to look like. And I like that for so many reasons, because it models values-driven, faith-based decision-making when our kids are incapable of that. Their prefrontal cortex is not yet developed and their thumb moves faster than their brain. And so sometimes they'll click on something impulsively and be exposed. And it's not a failure of their morals. It's a failure of their decision-making. So what do those conversations look like? Can you just say in a couple of minutes what it looks like to involve our children in those decisions?
I think, again, we're going to be having those conversations along the way. One thing that we might try is, you know, maybe we're on our email or on Instagram or, you know, something like that, and we get something in our DM or whatever, and we can pull our child over and say, okay, I want you to see what's going on here. Like, this is not a person I know, and the profile picture is, you know, not somebody I know, and they're being very vague about what they want from me. You notice that? And they're trying to lure, it's like bait. You know, they say hello or hello dear, and I'm just like block, 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 block.
Yes.
So, you know,
it's ridiculous.
Think I don't know any better? Yeah. So, but you can start there by just showing them on your own social media or on your own email. See, this is how I can tell this is a spam email. And, you know, look at the email address. Does that fit who they say they are? And so just little things like that along the way. And I feel like one of the best things we can do is just pray and ask the Lord for wisdom. Like, how do I do this with my particular children? So we aren't exposing them too early. We do want to keep their innocence. We want them to stay innocent for as long as possible. They don't need the burden that comes later, and they're not ready for it. So we need to, as parents, be able to navigate that with the Lord's leading. And again, it's just such an individualized decision for each family. But again, be prayerful.
But yes,
and
Dorinda, you're so right.
Child.
Just being prayerful, that is the best thing that we could do. And I can't think of a better way to sum it up and to close out the show by saying, pray that God will protect your children, because we know that He will. And if you want to find Dorinda, you can find her at her podcast, the Dorinda Wilson Podcast. And we'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.